Bandwidth for MacBreak Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Now I'm all confused.
How you doing for a podcast over there, John?
So what those cool effects in Time Machine, those are really cool, aren't they?
Yes.
Well, some people don't think they are.
You don't like the Starfield flying past you and all the windows?
I think
that's
great, but I think that some people are like, well, can we not have the star thing going?
Yeah, it looks cool.
I mean, it's the whole thing. You know, the nebula and the other stuff. It's like a bit too Star Trek-y and...
too space-themed.
Too space-themed.
Yeah, but it's using the cool new capability of the Mac OS, right?
Come on,
I think that it's going to be to somebody after the show to figure out where that QTZ file is and change it so that it could be like grass growing.
That'd be kind of cool.
So the more files you have, the longer the grass is.
Where you see a tree grow backwards from a full grown tree down a sapling.
Or maybe it goes into the system time and figures out what based on where you are, UTC, your location, your geolocation.
The world rotating.
Right. And then so then the grass is either gray or dead or...
snow on the grass.
Right, snow on the grass. But see, it doesn't snow in Miami, so there'd be no reason.
Yeah, but I want the Superman effect. So when you go back in time, you see Superman go flying past and the Earth starts spinning backwards and there's a
file. That doesn't work.
Oh. Okay.
I saw it on the screen. It worked on the screen.
Yeah, well...
What is the epoch counter?
We're talking about Quartz Composer. Yeah. And using Quartz Composer to hack Time Machine so it's less spaced effect.
Okay. Yes.
Well, we didn't say that, so somebody's really confused about the Superman reference and then the...
Yeah, you know.
Let them be confused. They're even more confused. They don't even know what they're listening to. Because we took the music out. There's no more music anymore.
I thought I heard music in the background.
No.
Are you going to tell people what the show's called?
Okay. No. Because they've obviously downloaded it.
Oh, right.
If they've made it this far, they're hooked.
Yeah.
What is...
But I think we got to tell them who we're brought to you by.
Well, I think this conversation is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment. Mm-hmm. And as part of this, you can get a free audiobook download of your choice when you go and sign up today. At Audible, log on to www.audiblepodcast.com/MacBreakTech. Do that today, and you'll get that free audiobook.
Is the www even required anymore?
It is a different server, right?
Yeah.
We'll talk about it another time,
right.
Subdomain.
You could actually have, four W's in front of there and get to somewhere completely different.
Yeah.
Or like for nowhere.
For the really lazy, just www, and then...
I always wonder why people don't make the DNS entries for www, because it's mistyped so often.
The other one is that people are saying dub, dub, dub. And it's like, okay, D-U-B,
D-U-B, D-U-B.
You get to some weird reggae music site.
Yeah. Welcome to dub, dub, dub. You are here.
Exactly.
You are here for free. You take all that you want. I'm cutting that out. No. Because this is the conversation that's gone nowhere so far. We're into this 5 minutes and we don't even...
Yeah, but...
We plugged the sponsor.
This is an audio composition, not necessarily... We want to talk about graphical composition, right?
Quartz Composer. It's pretty cool. It's gotten cooler in Leopard, but it still works in Tiger. Just because Leopard shipped doesn't mean they took the feature away like they did with the other thing.
Sherlock?
No, the other thing. The time is ticking for the dual booting.
A boot camp.
Boot camp.
I couldn't remember what
expires
that
was.
No, wait. Quartz Composer is an app.
Quartz Composer is a way of describing graphic things.
Yeah.
Using a language. It's a language that describes this. Right. So you can talk directly to OpenGL.
But OpenGL is a language.
OpenGL is a language, but it's really tough to get your head around it unless you're a programmer.
Yeah.
So the idea was to abstract it up one more layer and make it so that normal people could then make GPU-based applications.
So mere mortals can also create cool graphics.
Yeah, but the problem is that the mere mortals have to get their head around a new way of programming.
Yeah.
Because it's not obvious.
It accesses all the quartz underlay that you can you could access through any other programming environment. Like if you're doing a Cocoa app, you can access all of these quartz functions, but you're doing it through code. And this is the stuff that makes all the pretty in the operating system, the transparency, the stuff flipping around or sort of fading off without
channels.
So if
you guys just – I'm only going to ask one dumb question for this show. Could you start from like from the metal up when you're talking about these layers? When you say GL, you say quartz, you say Cocoa, I'm like, I'm lost.
So the graphics processor has
– A language of its own.
A language of its own.
And that's in the hardware.
It's in the hardware, and they're generally described as shaders.
And there's – three predominant ones out there
right
now today. There's NVIDIA's, there's ATI's, and then there's Intel's graphics system. And those are the three you're going to find on a Mac.
And a lot of people pinged me over the last week because of something I said on This Week in Media that was saying that the Intel G950 is not a GPU, which is far from the truth. It is a GPU. It just doesn't have the power and the speed.
Well,
and
it's integrated
complexity.
In the CPU also. It's part of the main system.
It's not in the CPU.
Isn't it on that
one? No, it's on the chipset.
Okay.
It's on one of the bridges.
It is a
GPU. It has a clock speed. It has pipelines. It has a shader language, the whole thing.
Does it have its own RAM or is it sharing system?
No, that's the thing.
That's one of its big...
That's one of the downfalls. With the way that it's built is that it uses system memory, a block of it like 64 meg or 128, and it's a finite number. It can't go much bigger than
114, I think, on MacBooks. It's like some weird number.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It's not a normal.
This is what we talked about
virtual memory
on the Basic Mac show the other day. We talked about shared graphics, and that's what you're referring to just now.
Yeah, and the thing is that there's nothing inherently wrong with a shared graphics system. From a 90% point of perspective, from a, you know, I'm surfing the web, I'm typing, I'm doing page layout.
Yeah, for that stuff.
I'm doing, you know, all those common tasks. The GPU that is the integrated graphics chip is fine.
Yeah.
You know, there's the only place where it really starts to show its edges, and in this case it's non-fuzzy edges or non-anti-aliased edges, is when you're playing games.
Well, there's a couple other areas, but games is the most predominant one people are going to see.
Is the people, you know, the people are going to play. They're going to want to take their, their frame rate based game, and they're going to load it up. They're going to want to turn on all the features, that probably aren't even supported anyway. But they'll still turn on the features, and they get a frame rate that's like 8 or 9 frames a second, and they'll go, "Wow, what's wrong with my computer?"
Yeah,
and part of it is that, you know, turning on all the features.
Okay, so
game.
We've got a graphics card that has its own language.
Right.
That's the hardware level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So the problem is that because we have different types of cards, we have three different cards we have to deal with on a Mac.
Mm-hmm.
On a Windows machine, there's three other graphics boards that you can get, chipsets.
There's actually more than that. But
I know, but there's three
predominant ones.
Right. And so there has to be a language that makes... That is common to the system, and that's called Quartz Extreme in this case, and that deals with drawing the buttons, the windows, the moving, and all that, and that so that people who are just programmers, just programmers, they're very smart. Those just programmers, they don't have to deal with writing the driver, the specifics to a card.
And there's some parts in there, too. I mean, OpenGL is encapsulated in the Core Graphics.
Core Graphics.
Or Quartz Composer. So there's multiple layers now in the Mac OS, and they've been building these up over the years. There's Core Data, there's Core Audio, there's Core Graphics. Quartz Composer and Quartz Layer is the graphical umbrella that covers a lot of the graphical elements in the system. So there's kind of a layer in between the hardware and the Quartz Graphics itself, because Quartz Graphics encompasses OpenGL, a bunch of driver capabilities, things like that.
And OpenGL is one of those. It's an open standard for doing exactly what John was talking. It's one layer above the hardware. So you write your graphics apps to talk to OpenGL. Mm-hmm. It handles the specifics of translating that into something the graphics card can do.
So in the in this case,
GL stands for graphic language.
Right, graphics language.
Okay.
So in the case if you were going to write a shader that did blurring or anti-aliasing of edges, then you would write that in OpenGL.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people who made your graphics card have to provide the code that processes the OpenGL.
I see.
So that it goes to their specific weird assembler language for their card.
And that's all built. That's hard in the card itself. Is that firmware?
That's in the GPU. That's the same. Mm-hmm. It has a similar instruction set to a CPU.
Yes.
But it's
designed for one purpose, graphics.
Yeah, it's only for graphics. It's for, you know, for dealing with this massive data that you're going to see at gigabytes at a time.
But what happens when OpenGL expands? How do the graphics cards keep up with?
So what happens is if OpenGL expands, so in this case they
OpenGL 3.0 is at the ARB right now,
right?
Which is the board that ratifies it. So there is a new move to a new version of OpenGL. Mm-hmm. Right now the current version is 2.0 something. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
So when that changes,
they'll deliver the code to the world. They'll say, here's the OpenGL standard.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll be to everyone else to take what they already have and implement that.
And most commonly, initially what happens is graphics card vendors write that into their driver, so it's software supported. But as it becomes adopted, they start adding more and more of those capabilities directly in the hardware to accelerate the capabilities.
Yes, I understand. Okay, so there would be a driver update.
Yeah.
Now, and maybe I'm going off in the weeds. What's the difference between that and firmware?
Firmware is the stuff that's in the card itself.
Yeah.
Right? So that's going to be the instructions that the GPU, when it first turns on, will go and get. So that's the initialization code, what they call erratas. Mm-hmm. So if there's a bug in the GPU somewhere, they can actually fix that by loading in some new code.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what happens when you do a firmware update.
Okay.
So in the case of a Mac, there's been three firmware updates for PowerBooks, or excuse me, MacBooks.
Mm.
And basically what happens is it goes and downloads, you have to hold the mouse button down, mm-hmm. and it beeps and goes, mm-hmm. and then you let go, and then it grinds a little bit more, and then you've got a fixed Mac, supposedly.
And these were firmware upgrades for the CPU.
And this was for the CPU itself.
Do we get firmware upgrades for GPU cards?
Yeah, but you don't see them. They're behind the scenes.
Typically,
right? Yeah. And so it'll just be something. It'll be something that gets loaded in the driver. And so after you do a restart, it'll load in, and you won't notice anything.
So it's phoning home sometimes, or it comes down through Apple?
No, it comes down through Apple.
It'll be a part of the driver install. If it's installing a new graphics card driver, one of the things it might do is install new firmware for the card as well.
Okay. I've never seen on Apple software updates, driver updates for a GPU.
Generally, you won't see the screen driver updates.
They're part of your general software updates. Now, if you have a third-party card, and there are a couple of those. There's like two on the Mac.
Then, one of them is from ATI.
Yep.
And then...
They're both from ATI.
Yeah.
And in that case, you would download the driver from them instead. But in general, even like I think Apple...
Yeah, but that's a shared driver.
Yeah, it's a shared driver.
The Apple people work very closely with ATI.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's ATI people on site at Apple to make sure that bug fixes are happening quickly and that additions to Quartz Extreme are being handled.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and so even though they may ship a card from ATI through the store.ati.com, then it will still come through, or excuse me, it's still the same driver that's the one that's the latest in OS 10.
Okay. This whole download a driver directly from the video card vendor is more of a Windows thing. Like it's assumed that you're going to be just downloading the most recent reference driver. If you want to get an update, you'd go to NVIDIA's site or ATI's site and grab it.
Right. So for a while, when Apple didn't support this, you could download the driver from ATI to get the feature to do portrait monitor. And so you download the driver, you put it in, it would say, we don't see an OEM card there. Didn't matter anyway because the ATI button would still be there, and you could control your screen to flip it to tall.
So now to extrapolate up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So we got the card. We got OpenGL above the card.
Right. Well, OpenGL is above the
yeah. It's open. It's above the card. It's just one of the layers. It's
in
one
core
of the
graphics. So if you were to look at this as layers, core graphics would really be kind of what's above the card. So that incorporates OpenGL. It's core animation now in Leopard. So you have all these cool new capabilities. You have different image capabilities. You have multi-core enhancement, meaning that your graphics are multi-core capable now. EXIF color for camera photo information. That's actually EXIF color data and handling of images is built right into the core imaging of the Mac OS now itself. So it's all
seems
part
like
of that.
An odd place for that, but sure, put that there.
But what it means is that you can take a you can take a photo to any program in the Mac OS if you rely on the base libraries. And it just works.
No, I understand. It just seems like an odd place.
Yeah.
True. That should be like another layer up
above it.
Yeah.
But okay. Until Quartz Composer came along, mm-hmm. you had to program this stuff through one of the available programming languages that had access to the Quartz libraries.
Right, so you had to be a C programmer or a programmer.
Yeah.
You know, classic sense in order to make this stuff go.
When you say Quartz libraries, Quartz is...
Quartz is a bunch of functions that you can access through your programs that give you things like make an image, run this filter, blur it. Spin it around, all the sorts of things that you see interface mm-hmm. elements doing, those are available to you in Quartz. So the libraries are that group of functions that you can use in your program.
Okay, that's an Apple only thing. Quartz is mm-hmm. part of the Apple OS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's above Core Graphics?
In fact, way of thinking about this, if you're coming from the Windows environment, or you know how people in the Windows, is somewhat similar to DirectX on the Windows environment.
Similar.
It is different, but it's a similar analogy in some ways.
The difference... That. And the big difference is that DirectX really enables game makers to do some incredible things.
Yeah.
And the Apple guys haven't really embraced those game guys.
This is more for the OS and general usability.
Right, general use, the idea that you're drawing, you know, basically on your screen, it's an OpenGL window that's right mm-hmm. there. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's managing that so that you don't have to worry about writing all those things to make that go.
Right.
All right, Quartz Composer. Quartz Composer is an application that sits on top of all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of having to go mm-hmm. and write a single line of C to make this go,
mm-hmm.
all I have to do is drag and drop stuff onto this window. So it's a visual – best way to say it, it's a visual programming environment. And you can write code in it now, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
This was not a capability before, but now in Tiger. But now you can just use stuff. So all these pieces are called patches.
Mm-hmm.
So you drag a patch onto this gray.
It's basically
area.
Well, yeah. It's more of a flow diagram analogy system.
Well, sure. It's kind of or if you've used Shake, mm-hmm. or if you've used one of the other nodal editors, you can see how this goes.
It's a bunch of little black. The patches are little black boxes that do.
Yeah.
They have inputs and outputs, and they do some sort of work. Right.
And the inputs can be multiple, and the outputs can be multiple. So you can have X go into Y, and Y and go into X, and get some different movements or motions or whatever you're looking for out of that. But when you're taking the output of something, you basically click on the output that you want and mm-hmm. you drag it over to the next patch that's going to accept that input. And that means, you know, you don't have to say, Y equals mm-hmm. the inputs times the 12 times the state of the CPU plus random 12.
Yeah.
And
you just draw a line.
You just draw a line. A couple of things that makes that really useful is that you're not having to debug something. You kind of know that the output mm-hmm. is the right output to begin with, and it's going in. You physically look at it. Physically? No. You can visually look at it, mm-hmm. and you can see, that's where that's supposed to go.
And you can actually see the data flowing through there, too. It's nice. When you mouse over any one of those outputs that's been wired up mm-hmm. and you've got the thing running, it'll show you the current value of the output.
Even
if it's a little image, mm-hmm. it'll show you a thumbnail, what's coming out of the image output. So you can, as far as troubleshooting goes, you can very quickly visually see, this value that's coming out of here is not exactly what I expected.
What you wanted.
Right.
Yeah, you don't have to debug it because you know the code is good, but your result might not be what you were looking
mm-hmm.
for.
In that case, you're just checking your wiring and mousing over inputs and outputs to see if it's set up the way you think it's set up.
Now, is this referred to as object-oriented programming, or am I totally off?
Well, it's
visual-oriented
programming.
Yeah.
It's really not an object, right? So it's not object-based in the sense that Java and C++ and Ruby and Python are object-based.
Okay.
Almost certainly, under the hood, it's been implemented in an object-oriented way, where each of these little black boxes is a type of thing, and that thing has properties and has things you can do to it. But as far as what's exposed to the user, yeah, it's visual programming in the sense that you are dragging widgets around and wiring them up together.
Now, you can, in the new version that's in Leopard, you can think of it in terms of objects. So you can take a group of things and you can put them into something that's called...
We're talking about macros?
Yeah.
Macro patch?
Right, a macro patch, right? And so in a way, you could take a whole bunch of stuff and then change the one thing and so that it could, you know, you're inheriting, you're inheriting a property or the inheriting functionality.
Yeah, macro is a good choice of language there too. I mean, people are somewhat familiar with macros in this sort of a step of a bunch of things that I've done before, but I want to call it with a single command from here on out and text editors or whatever. So this is the same thing. You can have a bunch of little widgets that you've set up in a way that doesn't do what any one widget would do out of the box, but it does a little piece of work that you want to use as a single entity from then on.
Right.
And it that also, you can call a macro it also makes, and reuse it.
It also makes your app less confusing because you basically have got the output of this going into the input of the macro, and then it chucks something out. Well, there may be a whole bunch of stuff that that macro is going to do that you just don't need to see every single time.
Right. Right. Okay.
And in fact, they call that basic, you were talking about the gray gridded area that you get by default when you open up a new composition. They actually call that the root macro patch. So essentially, you start out in this big macro that you then build little macros and beneath.
All right, so there's three kinds of patches. There's consumer patches, patches that basically they render the result to the screen, and then they're done. There's particles that fall into this into that gradients generators. I have a piece of paper that talks about all the generators that are there.
There's a bunch.
Yeah, there's a bunch. Or consumer ones. It's not on here. How do you know? There's also processor patches. So these are going to be things like that add numbers together or take the input of this, divide it by 100, and then kick that answer out to somewhere else. And then there's provider patches, and these things will... send out data. So provider patch would be like a mouse, an eyesight, a MIDI controller, temperature controller, or it could even be something like an LFO, which is basically something that just counts. Yeah, an LFO is that, right?
In a synthesizer.
A lost flying object.
Low frequency oscillator.
Yeah, there's an anime reference to LFO. I wouldn't even go there.
Right. Probably a lot of them.
We were talking about, I don't remember what it was. It was the Apple Script show.
Right.
And the Automator show. We were talking about how this stuff is kind of fun to just build something that is monolithic in the sense that it does a little piece of work and maybe you've got some static inputs plugged into it, maybe an image or a piece of text or whatever. But as we started playing with this, one of the things that I noticed is that this thing as well has an RSS downloader. So we had that thing where John had it downloading an RSS feed. And then the Automator script turned it into text-to-speech.
Right, text-to-speech.
A couple of these are in the source category. So if you're in Quartz Composer and you click on the Patch Creator button, it gives you this big laundry list of all the little black boxes that are available to you. And it's a long list. There's a lot of different stuff that can go in here. But
controllers, filters, composites.
Right. So if you scroll down to source, one of the ones, a couple that caught my eye are the RSS downloader. Again, just like the one in Automator. You give it a feed and it'll go grab the data that you could then throw into text items and that sort of thing. And that screensaver that ships with the OS where the Apple RSS stuff is floating around.
Right. So that uses this.
That is a that is, and in fact they use it as one of the example scripts. So but what's cool about this is that you could start to bring a bunch of data from your environment, whether it be stuff about your local system, the network, stuff you've downloaded
Flickr
dynamically.
For example.
Exactly.
There's a thing here that's a directory scanner. So you can say scan this specific path for whatever's new. And that could be pictures, it could be data, it could be text, it could be...
So I can build the old Data Navigator from SGI days that was in Jurassic Park?
Yep.
There you go.
Data Navigator.
There you go. There's a video input is the other one that's pretty pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. The first thing I did, and it was, I didn't like the way I looked in my eyesight camera, which is usually what happens when I turn on my eyesight camera. But I made a single cube. They have a 3D cube is one of the things you can render to.
Okay.
And you wire the video input to the images on the cube, and you can get this rotating cube that has the current input from your eyesight camera mapped onto it.
In fact, that's a prime example of this technology in use is photo booth.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Photo booth, all those special effects you're seeing in photo booth are nothing more than using these core Quartz graphics capabilities.
Right. Well, in fact, you can make your own
photo booth pieces.
Parts. Mm-hmm. You know, if you wanted for example, if you wanted to do fly eye, mm-hmm. you know, so that it had like a million mm-hmm. images that were all trying to turned mm-hmm. and then, you know, on the cylinder, you could do that fairly easily with this. All right. Well, so that everyone knows that this isn't just a complete, you know, why do I want this mm-hmm. kind of thing. This is where Quartz Composer can be used in the applications. We already mentioned iChat. You can go into iTunes as a visualizer because mm-hmm. one of the inputs that you can get is music or your sound port. Photo booth, of course, QuickTime, Keynote, Apple's iMovie, Final Cut Pro, Motion 2 and 3, Noise Industries Factory Tools, and Wirecast from Vera Software, mm-hmm. and another tool called iVisualize, which I've never used.
Is it a VJ application, iVisualize?
Probably.
Actually, several of the VJ programs let you access.
Actually, all of them do. If they support QuickTime, then they're going to support mm-hmm. Quartz Composer.
Right.
Or they should, anyway, without a problem. Anyway, that means that whatever it is that you're trying to write, whatever effect you're trying to do, it's very doable and within reach, mm-hmm. And will plug into all these applications.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that iStop Motion would work with this.
Mm, do they use the FX plug capability?
I don't know. Probably.
I don't remember. Anyways.
Anyway, pretty much anything. The other one that you can do, and this is very cool, is you can put a QTZ file mm-hmm. in a web page.
Oh.
So Safari will render it?
And Safari will render it.
Oh, neat.
Which means your Windows users won't know what that right. square
yeah,
is.
Yeah, but there have been so many ActiveX things over the years that I've gotten.
Right.
Like,
serves them right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny because, you know, you go to it and your camera turns on and you're like, what's that? And you're like,
I'm looking at myself. A web page.
How do they know? How do they get my feed?
If someone is interested in programming, and there's all sorts of entry points, right, for programming, even some of the scripting stuff we've talked about, we'll talk about more. But this is, to my mind, one of these visual programming environments like this, and this is a great example of a way to sort of start to play with assembling a program without having to deal with the aspects of writing code. Because you could set up a fully fledged sort of mini application within this. I was playing before we started recording here, some guy had made Asteroids. A 3D little asteroid.
Entirely in Quartz Composer.
Yeah, because it can accept keyboard input, and it's got images that you're bringing in that can be animated and all of that. So it's as a way of sort of playing with the concepts related to data input, output, and processing. It's a great way to get started.
The thing that I said when I first started learning this was I need a project.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to do something.
Yep.
And so I was looking through all of the patches, mm-hmm. and I found one that was particles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, particles are fun.
Systems,
you know?
Particle systems.
And the thing is that the particle system in here is really dumb,
mm-hmm.
right? All it is a generator, and
you've got to generate the math to make all this stuff happen.
It generates what, a bunch of sprites or billboards?
Yeah, it's a bunch of sprites.
Okay.
And the sprites are defined by a picture that has an alpha channel on it.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't have an alpha channel, then you can actually generate that by saying, here's my object, here's this, and have Quartz Composer pre-make that that alpha for you. But then I was like, all right, well, particles thing is kind of interesting, but what I really want it to do is I want it to be like a light organ.
Mm.
So then I'm looking and finding that I can go and get the volume of the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, all right, that's a really great generator. So that's going to generate a number between 1 and 0 and 1. So all of the numbers that are generated by something are from 0 and 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then that means you have to do a little bit of math on that to make it more useful,
because
it's just not the right number. And then, so I took the sound input, and then I wired that into two places. One of them was I wanted to change the pixel size based on how loud it was, and then the other one I wanted to do was change the intensity of its color.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And so, I'm looking at this, it was like, yeah, that's kind of cool. And then I dragged all the stuff together, dragged it all into the particles, and then the particles would change size and change. They would die.
Brightness.
Brightness as they go. And then I found out that, well, as cool as that is, that's only one channel.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I'm digging a little bit further, I found that I could separate out the frequencies by 16.
Mm.
And this was in Tiger. So then duplicated the area three times, changed the frequency, and then I had red, green, and blue for my color organ for that. And as you can see in podcast land, there it is. It's all bouncing, jumping.
You're going to put that composition up, right, on the show notes?
I'm going to put it on the show notes.
Great.
Yeah.
So could I run that right now on my machine?
Yeah.
Where is it?
It's on the thing. Here, give me that.
Give me that thing.
So you guys talk while I give.
Now, one of the things that I don't think we really, stressed here is that if you want to get into this, just like. Almost like iWork apps with Pages and Keynote, there's pre-starting templates, in essence, inside Quartz Composer that let you start out. And that's one of the things that we were talking about. Okay, you can do the music visualizer and the RSS visualizer and screensavers and all that, but there's actually starting points that help you get into that.
Right. So they pre-populate a composition with a few nodes that you'll probably use in a way like that to get started with that type of thing.
Right.
So the one that comes to mind is this graphics animation. So if you make a new composition and you say, I want to use the graphic animation template, it starts you out with this little thing where over a blue-black background, these lighter clouds are sort of growing and shrinking in a cycle.
Or you can choose the iTunes Visualizer and it sets up all the audio peaking for you automatically, all the stuff that John's talking about.
Yeah. So John built a micro visualizer,
And Quartz Composer in the new OS gives you that capability, and it gives you the nice starting point that lays out a bunch of this stuff for you. So all you have to do is once you install Quartz Composer and you run it that first time, you'll get that nice little menu at the beginning. So I know that sometimes maybe when we're talking about this, it's like, whoa, wait, where are these guys going with it? But this is actually one of those fun things that can, I want to reiterate, you can get into the concepts of programming and really cool, fun stuff in the OS. Mm. And it gives you this cool starting point to do that from, too.
The stuff that I find exciting, the first thing that I always look at for tools, in tools like this one, are those, how can it talk to the world outside? Because increasingly, doing something that's just confined to your machine is great, but more often than not you'd want it to interact with the net in some, or data that's out there in some way like you do. So the fact that they're opening up RSS, and this has an XML reader as well, so anything you could download
that's
in
color organ.
Got it.
You said organ. That's what it's really called.
Did we just lose our explicit rating?
I don't think we hit any of the deadly words in the...
So what else have we made with Composer so far? I made an epoch counter.
You made an epoch counter?
Yeah.
It
shows you
Will Smith's I Am Legend epoch counter?
Right. It shows you your system time.
Uh-huh.
And it has a glow, and it grows and shrinks.
Oh.
It's really easy to make.
Let's see your epoch counter.
So you have to make sure this is set for microphone input.
Right. I just loaded up Sean's thing on my computer.
Not this microphone input.
Just by talking, it's sensitive that the color organ will just, I said organ, will just work.
Now, I want to put that on my desktop, so as I'm doing work on my computer, the desktop keeps changing.
Yeah.
Can you?
Yeah, you could. It'd be quite annoying, I think, but you could do it.
All right. So the first thing that I, when I was learning this, I downloaded the documentation at Apple. Uh-huh. So it was developer.apple.com/graphicsimaging/quartz/quartzcomposer.html.
You download a manual? Why would you ever know?
Because this thing, the very first time I opened this, I was like,
what do I do?
I don't get it.
Now, I thought that walkthrough was
pretty good.
Mm-hmm. There is the built-in getting started also in the new help menu system, which is actually a nice little getting started. And it walks through a lot of things we've been talking about. You know, what's core animation, what's core video, OpenGL, QuickTime, how do they play together. It actually walks you through a bunch of these things. So it's actually kind of a nice little thing. But it is written as a programmer-style document. So if you've never read a programmer-style document, I'm assuming the stuff you have there, John,
it's
is from, similar.
It's actually I felt right at home with it.
Okay. Oh, no, this is okay.
This is a different way. Yeah, it's not the reference material.
No, this is different.
It's not it's not the stuff from the dev notes.
Right.
Or the tech notes. Mm-hmm. It's very approachable.
Yes. So, yeah, and that is the problem when a lot of people jump into the stuff.
Well, especially if you've
tech notes are a little different.
Especially if you've never worked with a visual language before.
Right.
I found, because I've worked with Max MSP before. We did a project about 8 years ago that required some inputs and some outputs. And we were able to do it really quickly with Max.
And that's an audio design?
It's an audio design program.
Okay.
But it also, in this case, we just needed a number coming out of a microphone.
And Cycling74.
Cycling74.com is the place where that came from. There's a open source version of it or that's been modeled after it called PD, which stands for pure data. And that's another visual, you know, drag stuff into this kind of tool. Not so much used. It's more general than Max stuff was. Max was all about audio. Pure data or PD is more just a visual programming language. And then there's another tool that's open source as well called I don't know if it's open source. It might be. Processing is another language that does this. And it's a dumb name. It shouldn't be called that. But it works surprisingly well.
It works well.
Does your little thing here, John. I'm running it now. I'm mesmerized.
I know your screen is... There you go.
Yeah, you're never going to get anything done now.
I know it's my new lava lamp. It's very nice.
Ooh, it's so pretty.
So are you inspired now, Craig? Are you going to start playing around with Quartz Composer?
I've always had this idea of something that represents the weather visually and all these different aspects of the weather. And seeing that this has an RSS reader, I can tell it to look at a weather site, get the data, then interpret that data visually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to do this weather mandala. So with one glance, I could see roughly what it's like outside without having to look outside. And then I can also see what it's like in Boston and in London.
Yeah. So, that's nice.
So this is like, wow. I mean, just, just what you guys showed me today, I've never looked at this in my life. I can see how this could work out. Yes. I can see how people
get very into this and like spend many hours
For example, there's a feed that's provided for all the airports in the United States.
Yep.
You can basically ping it and it'll give you back this chunk of data.
Real-time data
that's the temperature, the pressure, the visibility, the ceiling, the cloud height, all that. And it's really easy. It would be really super easy to parse it with that.
Mm-hmm.
With that.
Well, and then you can also, and a good example is also look at Dashcode, which we should talk about at some point. Mm-hmm. But Dashcode has a great little real-time flight tracker because even the location of aircraft in flight is a real-time data feed you can get, and it's open to the public. There's also a great Google Map overlay where you can do this same thing. So you can take that same data feed and feed it into Quartz Composer. Yeah.
And the cool thing is that you can take your Quartz Composer stuff and you can use that in a dashboard, a widget, your own code. There's a library that's on, or a sample application that comes with the developer tools. That basically all you have to do is drag your Quartz Composer thing into it, do a compile, and you've got an app that is that.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's one of those other targets for this. We're talking about using it sort of in the abstract to make things that are self-contained. But one of the other outputs for this is if you are writing a Cocoa application and you just want a rich graphics interface for some portion of it. You go into this and you can be snapping things together really quickly to make the visual look that you want. And then that's accessible to you. It's got inputs and outputs that are accessible to you in the code. So you can have a regular desktop app that has a bunch of little Quartz components that are working in there to provide the rich media experience, if you will.
John, that's very sci-fi.
It is very sci-fi. Well, speaking of sci-fi, you know, all this talk about stuff, you know, using Quartz Composer to, you know, do my bidding has reminded me about a Robert Heinlein book called The Puppet Masters.
I haven't read that one.
You've never read The Puppet Masters?
I haven't.
No, this is you've seen this then many times. This is the basis for the movie The Faculty by Robert Rodriguez.
You ever see The Faculty?
Oh.
I haven't seen it.
Did you ever see Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
I've heard of it.
Yeah. Well, you've not seen Invasion of the Body
Snatchers.
It's kind of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Uh-huh. Although the difference is that the puppet masters keep the host alive and control them.
Okay.
Whereas the body snatchers basically do body replacement. Mm-hmm. Although I don't get that. I mean, why would you go to the trouble of tearing of duplication?
Because you find the good DNA strand and you build a healthy body.
It's a lot of effort. I mean, why wouldn't the creature just figure out, oh, we like this, and then make thousands of them?
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
But then they can't invade the population easily.
Anyway, that's why Puppet Masters is such a brilliant book. And in case you don't like to read, if you want the story told to you, you can go to audible.com, get a free book, use your free book, actually, as this, and to hear this story.
Great.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you can find that at www.audiblepodcast.com/MacBreakTech. So go there and you can get this as one of your free books if you want.
The crazy thing about this is this was written in 1951.
Heinlein was way
there are some great fiction like that. You look at, why am I spacing his name suddenly? Who wrote Blade Runner.
Philip K. Dick.
Philip K. Dick. Mm-hmm. I mean, almost everything he's written has turned into some great movies. So, and he was way ahead of his time on
some stuff. His stories and his movies are not the same thing.
No, but they're the inspiration for a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
But this Heinlein story in particular holds up very well.
Yeah.
Yes, and they hold up as a listening event, I find, because I listen to Stranger in a Strange Land.
Yeah, that still works.
And I really liked listening to it. It just has a different quality about it, rather than reading.
You grok it much better.
I grok with fullness. And so that's what... And the other nice thing with the Audible version of Puppet Masters is it is unabridged, so we get the full...
We like unabridged.
12 hours of audio goodness.
Cool.
Yes. Thank you, Audible.
Actually, that would be
great. Awesome. I got to go read some more of his stuff.
Yeah.
The book that we're going to get back to our Quartz Composer, but the book that I read as a kid and then read later on as an adult, which was Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
Starship Troopers was a very inspiring book when I read it when I was 13. Mm. And then it was very propaganda oriented feel to it when I read it as an adult. I got to see myself change.
Well, Verhoeven did. Yeah. I know a lot of people didn't like the movie, but I thought Verhoeven captured some of that, you know, almost fascist state feel in some ways.
Sure. That you kind of don't see as a kid. You don't read the political undertones of that. Mm-hmm. Although I did miss the power suits.
Yeah.
Which is why the animated was such a better...
Well, actually, a lot of people like the animated better. So.
It's one more rat hole, but related. We saw Blade Runner the other night. There's the new... The new cut. Right, saw it down in...
There's five of them. Right, yeah.
But it still holds up well. The haircuts don't hold up, but everything else...
Yep.
Holds up.
But in Blu-ray,
it
looks so nice.
Oh, really?
I was so impressed.
We gotta save this for another show.
Anyways. Okay.
There's another show I guess we're talking about.
That we're lacking ideas for
nice
shows.
Nice visual effects here. Actually, speaking of visual effects, that would make a cool screensaver.
You can use this. You can use this for visual effects.
Like a nice Blade Runner, get some of those models, have the spinners flying by.
There's smoke in this. You could actually get the effect to render.
I could do the opening credits from the piece from the movie. You know,
there's smoke in Quartz Composer.
Well, there's smoke in Quartz Composer. You could make it out of a particle.
That's all smoke system is.
Oh, okay.
It's a particle system.
Okay.
So
yeah. So really, Quartz Composer, if I'm grokking, this is, you've got, it's just kind of one level down from a user application.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. There's kind of nothing, because this is kind of friendly in a programmer's kind of worldview.
It's friendly.
Not in a user's worldview.
No, not in a user's point of view, but it's also friendly in and accessible in a graphic designer's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Because this, you know, I would have
similar to high-end graphics.
I would have
tools.
To spend three or four days mm-hmm. teaching somebody how to use this. But after I teach them what to do, mm-hmm. then they could make some incredible things.
Here's the thing to
practical
think about
things,
this.
Practical things.
Yeah. Imagine if you had this inside of Final Cut directly. You could build your own effect right inside Final. In mm-hmm. essence, you can do that right now with it. Mm-hmm. But if you had something like this, it's not too far from having some of the interfaces already in Final
Cut. What do you
mean
something like this? If you
it's Shake.
This? Well, yeah, Shake. But no one's going to use Shake anymore because it's been rendered.
Motion.
It's been rendered dead by so many other tools.
Mm.
Right.
That said, all of the things that folks who are used to manipulating graphics mm-hmm. are expecting to see in a compositing sort of environment
yeah.
where you're trying to blend images together, those are all there. That first category in the patch browser of composite has all of the sort of blend operations
yeah.
and things like you'd find in Photoshop for the different layer mm-hmm. effects
right.
and
well,
all of that.
This is exactly.
So you could do partial A and B mm-hmm. right there.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just did a project for my daughter's class. I did a video thing
mm-hmm.
yeah, where we did something where a kid catches on fire, right? And obviously we use special effects.
Sure.
Right.
And
no
we
kids
use some,
were actually harmed.
This time.
No kids were harmed. and Kenji had some great stock video footage of flames, and
okay.
so I used that. But I wanted just a little wisp of smoke, mm-hmm. just a tiny wisp,
mm-hmm.
and no one really had it in stock, you know, stock imagery.
Right.
And I thought, God, it would be really nice to have this little wisp of smoke. But I didn't do it because, you know, it's only a school project, and I let it go. But now I'm thinking, had we done this show right. 2 days ago, I probably could have gone in here and
yeah,
made a little wisp of smoke, dropped it into Motion.
Okay, so
right?
And Motion actually has a smoke effect. It's kind of buried, unfortunately.
Oh,
in Motion, that is basically one of these.
So the other place you can do it is you could make it in After Effects. Mm-hmm. You go and you mm-hmm. make a cloud
right.
that's about 12,000 or 1,200 pixels tall. And mm-hmm. then... knock it back, blur it, put a mask around it,
mm-hmm.
and then move the image on mm-hmm. underneath the mask,
mm-hmm.
and then that looks like smoke.
Mm-hmm. The difference there, and really, you know, with Quartz Composer is really taking advantage of where GPU technology has come.
Mm-hmm.
We are at the capability level now that literally something a few years ago that would have taken minutes, if not hours, to render,
yeah.
we can now do in real time here.
Right.
Yes. I mean, I used to do this on $1 million SGI equipment for high-end flight simulators, and now I'm doing this on my laptop, and I can do way more here than I ever did on that $1 million SGI.
And you know how the extreme cost is going to be a barrier to making
mm-hmm.
people adopt this
yep.
free. See, they should have sold this for like $700 or $800 as a toolkit, and then people would be like, oh, it's a $700 toolkit.
That is a subtle difference, too, the way you're using this in that Motion and stuff does do some real time. That one of the advantages mm-hmm. of Motion is how much it can show you and give you the real time feedback as mm-hmm. to what you're doing as you're manipulating all the elements. One way to think of the Quartz Composer is like the Motion engine running for you as long as the Quartz composition, the output of it.
Yeah,
yeah,
but see,
is
here's
running.
Here's five things that Motion won't do. They don't have network services, so you can have
right.
Bonjour, network broadcaster and receiver. There's a network synchronizer, which means mm-hmm. that you could have multiple of these things running, and they could go, are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Go, and then
mm-hmm.
make that work. And then there's another sender and receiver called OSC,
mm-hmm.
whatever that is.
Yeah, I haven't figured that one out yet.
Yeah, I haven't figured that
so
out
instead of yet. So instead of going into Motion and creating a static output video of
mm-hmm.
the kid with the flames or whatever, you could have something where it's kid, flames, smoke, and then, like John's talking about, data of some sort is flowing into the thing. So you could have an application where, and I don't know why you wouldn't use that as the backdrop necessarily, but the point being that you've got an environment and something that can kind of run as a self-sustained thing instead
of
creating explicit assets like you would add a Motion or After Effects.
You could have even done, potentially with something like this, a little app that basically she could have done the commercial live.
Live, right.
She's up there
mm-hmm.
acting it
right.
out. and suddenly you see her pants on fire on the screen,
right,
coming through on the screen. So
all
these things are now possible without necessarily sitting down writing a bunch of code. That's what's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Like, exactly. Especially when you know that it could track. If you had a pink dot somewhere on the costume, that could be the tracker. Mm-hmm. And then it would just go, oh, there's the pink dot, and it would make that fire.
Make that's where fire
stick
is.
Right there.
Yes.
It's kind of powerful that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is that it's not easy. Okay, so in order to get this color thing to work, the very first project that I did, I spent 2 days. Because I've never, you know, this was a brand new tool. Mm-hmm. The doc, this was a year and a half ago, essentially. There was very little documentation on or tutorials on how to do this. Now there's a whole bunch of them. The VJ people have gone and really embraced this technology.
Because they love it. It's great
for them. Yeah, it does amazing things for them. So they've written a ton of tutorials about this. So you don't even have to remember to go look at the show notes for this. Just go to Google and type in Quartz Composer tutorial.
Mm-hmm. You'll find
you'll find 50 of them.
Yep. Now, one of the things I do want to say, if you are going to do this and you're going to be dealing with video or you want to do things, one of the places to go, like normal, is go up to the Quartz menu and go to the preferences. And there's a viewer pane that lets you set. If you're going to do video, you know, 4:3, 16:9, I'm going to be doing DVNTSC, you can change frame rates, you can do all those kind of things. So there's a lot of additional settings. And this is, even though it's more of a programmer's tool, there's still a bunch of preference settings up under the preference menu that give you different capabilities. So it's something that people overlook quite often. And, you know, it's one of the first places I like to go and like, oh, what else can I do with this beyond what's there in the main GUI? So
the thing that was missing in the first one, first version of this, there was no timelines. I could not really easily make a controller based on time. You could actually kind of do it. You could open a file and have all the ticks in it and have it read from that, but it was still often too, I never mastered it from a control point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's a timeline tool or a timeline patch, and you can load that up with whatever you want it to be. And the coolest thing is that you can then say, you know, make it synchronize with something. So if you're loading in a sound, that can go with the sound so that it doesn't stop.
Synchronized
sound. Yeah, so it doesn't stop. It just doesn't keep on going.
The timelines are cool because they're exposed to you as a curve. So if you've ever used like an F-curve editor in any animation program or whatever, you're defining how that timeline's values are going to occur over time with familiar tools, points, your keyframes, and then the tangent handles and all that stuff.
Right.
It's worth noting something that sort of tripped me up when I first started working with this was that I thought that everything that was available to me for a given patch was available through its inputs and outputs as you see it in the patch editor there.
No,
but knowing that there's an inspector window with settings, settings drop down. So it shows your input parameters, which you can see in the patch editor. Your output parameters, which you can see in the patch editor, but then the settings, that middle one in the inspector, that's key to know because if there are certain patches where you can dial in settings or define a file that it's reading from, that sort of thing. And
yeah, that was a big trip. Like, how do I define the path?
And yeah,
like,
where is
you have
that
to actually
stuff?
Drag the thing into the little window or double-click the window, and then it opens the... So some of this stuff is not obvious.
Well, yeah, again, and it's not that this is foolproof. This is not a consumer-level
app. It was never made for the knob.
Yeah, no, this is not the noob. I pull that.
I was waiting for that other O to come in there.
John, I added a lenticular
halo. Oh, hey, it's even cooler.
To your
the organ thing. Tool is even neater now. It's got...
This was done by, talk about a noob. I just dragged lenticular halo. And
you just made a new thing,
I just
man.
Did something.
He made organ.
Now, one organ of the things I do want to mention...
More colorful.
A way sort that of. If people find this too daunting when they first get into it, but they want to see what things are capable, is to go play with Core Image Funhouse.
Mm. That's fun.
And Core Image Funhouse is in the graphics tools directory under the development tools when you install it. And it goes in and lets you take images and do all kinds of cool things that are using the same capabilities pretty much. In essence, you're getting through the Quartz
That brings up a good point. Did we mention at the beginning that you actually need to have the developer tools installed?
If you've been hunting around for
the past 45 minutes looking for this mysterious thing called Quartz Composer.
They tell me it's on my computer, but I can't find it.
Yeah, you have to have the developer tools
installed.
Well,
it's on your disk, your installer disk,
yeah.
And it's in a folder. It's not in an obvious...
Additional installs.
This is in Leopard. And you have to...
Actually, it's not the additional installers. The additional installers, I think, is actually the applications, all that. It's another folder there. It's the bottom one, and you got to go in there and actually install developer tools.
Right, basically. And it's Xcode 3.
If you can't find your disk, you can download it, right?
It's a free download.
It's a big one.
File.
Yeah.
Well, that's not huge. I mean, what am I saying? I've downloaded bigger things all the time.
It's still a big download.
You guys talked about the example code?
Yeah. Well, the defaults when you first start out?
No, the stuff
I think
that's
he's
in the
talking
folder,
about the developer.
In the compositions folder?
Oh, right. Yeah. No, we have
There's
not talked about
conceptual,
that.
Conceptual, core image filters, feedback, graphic animation, graphic transitions. That's useful for iMovie, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Image filters, that would be if you're going to load this up into Photo Booth.
Right.
An interface builder. Music visualizers, uh-huh. which is... Mm-hmm. Using, you know, drag and drop that into iTunes, and you're on your way. Particle systems, we need to cue that song now.
Particle man, doing the things of particle man.
And RSS visualizers, screensavers, and XML examples. So they're all there. This is possibly one of the best, I went through all of this the other day. This is one of the best examples that I've ever seen delivered with a developer tool that really captures all the stuff that you might want to do.
Right.
Although that Club Lisa thing doesn't work.
Club Lisa.
When you have the music going, it's supposed to have the little dude dance around.
And
but I guess that's for everybody to figure out how to...
How to actually do that?
How to actually get that to work.
And if you're kind of lost where John was telling you to go, that's in the examples folder.
Yeah.
So it's you'll actually go up one directory, the core, or I should say... Quartz Composer is found under Developer Applications, Quartz Composer. But at that same folder level as the applications, there is the examples folder, there's extras, there's all kinds of things if you're really going to be doing a lot of development work that you need. But the examples folder is where you're going to find all the stuff John was talking about.
This stuff works in both Tiger and in Leopard. However,
not everything does.
Not all of these things work in Leopard. And I do believe that the browser tells you if it doesn't.
Yeah, you can actually, inside Quartz Composer, you can actually turn on display 10.4 compatibility information.
Oh, right.
So you can actually know what's going to be compatible with 10.4 versus 10.5.
So right on.
You have that capability in there.
So that's cool. Evidently, there's a whole bunch of hidden commands, hidden patches.
Secret kung fu.
Yeah, secret things. And...
It's a lot of cool stuff in this folder, guys. Yes.
In the Quartz Composer?
Do you see the one, the Twitterverse? They actually have one that reads, give it your Twitter username and password, and then it will map the people around you in sort of a visual
display. Yeah, that's pretty cool. And then the inside of it spins.
There's a little quartz piece?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And where'd you find that?
It's one of the XML examples in the XML folder.
This was the developer conference example.
Oh, it's
the guy who was the product manager for this actually... showed this as one of his
okay.
one of his apps.
Yeah, it's got nice pretty swirlies.
It's
in the
also
middle.
A great example of macros.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see, you know, like, look at that app and like, that's easy.
Yeah. So you're saying
there's a lot of noodles in
there.
Yeah,
that. When you open it, there's only a few noodles and then the noodle piles grow.
I've had nothing but fun with this. This is kinda like for me, this is kinda like Mac Paint all over again.
It's one of those rat holes that you can start playing and you can fall way deep into.
Well, and when, you know, like when we saw this at the developer conference,
this is more of a rabbit hole, actually, I guess.
No, this is like playing with model rockets. It takes up all your time and you blow stuff up once in a while. And
yeah, but I want to be Alice and going to Wonderland and all that.
No, this is like space exploration.
Oh, okay.
In a way, no. The thing that was funny thing that I saw at the developer conference that helped me get really excited about this was the daily displays for the conference. all of the displays around were being driven by this Quartz Composer app that was a scheduler. And you know, on the hour, it on the 15 minutes, it would change. Yep. And it was, there it was doing its thing. And the guys go, oh, yeah, that's a Quartz Composer app. You're like, that's a Quartz Composer app?
Right.
Yeah.
That's one of the exciting things about this as far as like the design for user interfaces go. This is a tool for folks who are generally, you know, not necessarily the best user interface designers, the folks who are coding the guts of the thing, to be able to put really slick interfaces.
I'll put that GUI on it later.
Right, right, right. To put good-looking faces on these applications. This definitely puts that within reach.
Cool graphics.
Yay. It's just a fun thing. All right, so here's where you can find this thing. It's in after you install Xcode, go to the developers folder in examples, the core and examples Quartz Composer folder. We'll have all those examples. If you want the documentation that I used for teaching myself how to use this, it's developer.apple.com/graphics-imaging/quartz/quartz/quartz-composer.html, or just go to the show notes on macbreaktech.com and you can find that stuff there. There are another couple of examples that I found. One of them is a bunch of meters that somebody made, some VU meters and some bar meters and some other things that can be used in Final Cut, Motion, or you can download them and use them in your own project.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd like to hear about that.
Yeah, coremelt.com/products/products-4final. Okay, all the words have a dash in front of them.
Okay.
Products for Final Cut Studio slash downloads. Anyway.
Yeah.
You get the idea.
All you had to do is put free stuff after your thing. Anyway, there's these cool meters that you can open up and see what's going on with that. It's a great example of a real-world use that appears to be very simple, but it turns out to be very complicated. I think that's what I got.
Cool. Go have fun. Explore. Play.
All right. Sorry that we don't have an intro anymore. If that really bothers you, let us know. info.macbreaktech.com. That's an email address. We don't have a Twitter thing, but I didn't know how to use Twitter until like a couple of days ago.
Now that you understand how Twitter works.
Who knew that they had to click the button that said replies to see the replies?
They always hide stuff like that, don't they?
You never know.
Like, you know, didn't ever blink and said, hey, you have new replies, or didn't ever do anything. I'm like, I've been in this business too long not to have seen that.
So John, are we going to post your organ light thing?
Yeah,
up on the on the website.
You said Google organ.
Play.
I did. You called it a color organ.
I know.
And we can give my enhanced version if you like.
Oh yeah, we can do that.
So that'll be at macbreaktech.com.
It'll be on macbreaktech.com/.
Well, this whatever the show is, right?
No, there's a folder that I think it's called stuff. Where stuff is going.
Stuff. Excellent. I want stuff.
I'm pretty sure that's where that is, because that's where the automator stuff started to go. Make world better. Yes. And make world better deluxe.
And the Casey
Kasem. The kids were clamoring for the deluxe, so we had to give it to them.
I just put them in the same file. The same zip
file. They're so generous.
Might as well. You know, they're going to download both of them anyway, so might as well.
You're going to want to see the history of the app, too, so as it evolves.
I want to see them post it back to us, send it back to macbreaktech.com.
So we need to have an upload area.
No, just email it, because it's a wee little
thing. How about an open FTP server?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. With a limit of 400K.
There you go.
Yeah. The original Mac floppy disk, 400K. It's not a lot you can do in 400K anymore.
It would be fun to see what people are doing with this. If you do want to send us stuff that you're doing with Quartz Composer and or the Automator stuff from these previous episodes.
Maybe we should do a video episode to show that off.
Now you're getting complicated.
With some funky techno music.
Alrighty.
I'm John Foster.
I'm Ben Durbin.
I'm Ken Giacotto.
I'm Craig Severson.
Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you on the other side. That's weird that we don't have intro music anymore.
Where'd the music go, man? I didn't know what to do.
The guy complained, and I'm like, all right, well.
I'm at peace with it.
I was like, I should just be sarcastic and just.
One guy complained.
You should sing the intro music this time. Just do your best impersonation of what used to be. Like.
It's like bing, 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 bing,
We know during the conversation already impacted.
No, it's over.
Oh, sorry. So I'm playing with Pixie. Man, that's a fun little app.